Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Corner. My name is Serena Demento, and I'm the executive producer here at Four Bent Corners. Today, we have the very talented Amsterdam-based director, Joris Noordenbos, who's here with us today to talk a little bit about his career, his work, and some tips about the industry. Thank you so much for being here with
us
today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Awesome. So tell me, you're a director who's done a lot of different type of work within the food and kid sector. So do you have a preference? Do you like to do both?
Well, I actually think that the variation between the two is what makes it really interesting because you're sort of playing chess on two boards at the same time. And what I really like about that is that they require very different things from me as a director, where the food work is much more technical, very precise. You can nerd out on it completely. You know, you need to be a perfectionist for that. And I think with kids, you cannot be a perfectionist. The day goes a bit how it goes. And it requires much more of my social side, because there you need to, you know, fully sort of shape the day to fit your kid actors. You really rely on your social skills to make them be natural in front of the lens. So I think doing both of them is what really makes it interesting.
I mean, they say in the film industry, right, two of the toughest things to film, right, are dogs and kids, because you never know what you can expect. So how do you prepare the crew in order to work with the children on set, and how do you navigate that?
Well, one of my biggest fears in the beginning of working with kids is that, you know, at some point in the day, they were going to say, you know what, I've had it, I'm done, you can jump up and down, I'm not going to do anything anymore. And by working with kids a lot more, I started to figure out that there's, you know, if you prep right, that will not happen. And there's so many aspects to making sure that the kids can deliver a good performance, and it starts with casting. I really noticed that if, you know, with adults, they can be actors, so they can sort of take themselves out of the situation that they're in and play a role. But usually, I mean, there's amazing kid actors, but usually you try to cast a kid who, first of all, can be themselves. So you cast a kid that is already sort of the person that you're looking for, but is also genuinely enjoying being in front of the camera, enjoys maybe a little bit the attention, but also the excitement, because that is going to give you a much more solid basis to pull them through the day. And then what I really try to do is sort of structure everything in that shoot day to facilitate the kids. So that can be making sure that you check in with the parents if they're a morning or an evening person. Kids tend to be not great before 10 maybe. So if they come from far, you know, make sure that they book a hotel and that they can get 2 hours of extra sleep, you know, or make sure that you know what they like to eat for lunch so that the caterer has that food. So make them feel comfortable, but also structure the day in terms of shooting that it's easy for the kids. So the Dutch government helps you in a way, because they're very strict in the amount of shoot time with kids. Right. But you yourself also have to be very vigilant that, for instance, you know, you shoot all the important close-ups or shots with the kids first, even though that means that you're all over the place in terms of directions, and that you do all the pickups with close-ups later, and you can even maybe use a hand model for
right.
that.
Right. So doing more of the difficult shots early on in the day, and then saving more of the quote-unquote easier shots for later. That makes
absolutely. And what I do quite often is that you have two actors for the same role, where you have one for the face and all the emotion, and that there's a sort of a stand-in that is doing all the little close-ups with the hands. And that way you can shoot 4 hours with kid number one and
right.
4 hours with the...
To accommodate for that limitation that we have with filming children
exactly.
on set.
Exactly.
All right, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What I love about your work, Joris, is that when I watch it myself, I feel like a child. Like, it connects me to my youth. And I think that there's a lot of magic in your direction and the way that you capture those moments, especially in the Donald Duck commercial and the IKEA one and the Cremissimo commercial that you did. Do you want to talk a little bit about the lighting and the direction that you give cinematographers that you work with?
Well, I think a lot of it is in where you place the camera. And I think what I really try to do is, as much as possible, put the camera in the perspective of the kids. So put it at their height and make the adults bend over and reach to them instead of the other way around. So, you know, like, a lot of it is in perspective. If you look down on your kids, you immediately feel like an adult. But if you place the camera lower, where, you know, their eyes are. You see the world as you saw it when you were young. So a lot of it is in that. And I think a lot of it is also recently a lot of tools have become available that allow you to push that even further. For instance, I remember vividly when I was a kid, I used to love playing with toys and lay my head on the side of the table and be so low to the table that every toy you put there looked huge, you know. And nowadays you have amazing lenses, probe lenses that allow you to put the camera in that perspective, to put it so low to a surface, or even, you know, if you play with Lego, push it through some Lego structure. And that was the perspective I really recognized as a kid. And by doing that in films, you try to get a bit that energy, that feeling back that I remember from being young. And I'm really dying to make a Lego commercial. I feel like I can really use the tools that you have in food to bring to life cool. toys. Yeah. I think tabletop and toys can be a fantastic synergy.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the probe lens, I mean, what an awesome lens that is. And and using that for kids commercials is fantastic, because you really do get those larger than life perspectives.
Yeah.
That
absolutely.
Then connect the viewer back to their youth, which I really, really appreciate.
Yeah.
Right. It's so versatile. There's so many different things you could do, especially with food as well. But before we go into the food conversation, I wanted to just say, have you ever had difficulty working with children ever on set? And
absolutely.
how did you manage that?
Yeah, so there's one example that I can give you that taught me a lot of lessons. I shot a commercial in Thailand, two kids, a boy and a girl, and they were not related, but they played brother and sister. And the girl was really outgoing, and she was great on screen, but she also kind of knew it. And I think she had already quite a bit of experience, even though she was, I don't know, 6-7 years old. And then the next year, the brand wanted to do another commercial, and they wanted the same kids. And this time we shot in Singapore. And I remember that girl saw me again, recognized me, and she was like super happy to see me. And I was so charmed by her, and I was so almost a bit flattered that she recognized me a year later, that I fell kind of in her friendship trap. That, you know, for the first half of the day, we were kind of like a bit like friends, you know, joking around, and then after lunch, it was warm, you know, it was humid, Singapore, we were in a park, she just had eaten, and she just didn't want to do it anymore. And what happened is that she looked at me like, dude, you know, I don't want to do it anymore, and you can make that happen. Why don't you, you know, tell everybody to give me a break? And I was like, no, you know.
That's not how it works.
That's not how it works. And I thought, you know, it was a very valuable lesson for me that, you know, I really enjoy the energy that kids bring, but that I should keep my distance to a certain point, that they understand that, you know, I'm there, or they are there to work. And they are essentially there to work for me.
Right. That's the agreement. But it's
that's
difficult
because
they're young and they don't understand. They're like, hey, you're my friend. You have my back. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
So I need to usually be careful not to become too amicable with them. I mean, don't get me wrong. I really want to give them a very safe feeling. I want to make sure that everything is there so they can do a good performance. But I'm also, you know, and I do joke around, but I'm much more strict in when I joke around. And that's actually, my wife is also a director, and something that she said to me that I really took over is that she says, like, I make a very strict rule. The set is not for joking around. As soon as I see them joke around, I tell them, you know, because then they know that where is work being done and where is fun. And it doesn't mean that the day cannot be fun, but they also should understand that you don't joke around on set. And I try to take that even a step further. Is for me now, I have the rule, if a kid starts to joke around on set, it's, well, first of all, we say something about it, but it's also immediate feedback to me, we're taking too long. It is not about them, it's about us.
Yeah. You know? Having that awareness and,
they
and
are
discipline
bored, essentially,
to create those kind of restrictions and boundaries, but also make it fun. That's a difficult balance to have on set.
Yeah.
As a director, Joris, how do you create a healthy environment on set?
I think in kids' projects, people tend to themselves be on their best behavior because there's kids around. And that's why I actually love those projects a lot, because even the grumpy grip is showing his soft side when there's kids around. And I sometimes wonder, you know, why we're not more like that on a normal set. But it also makes you understand that it's important to work with people that I feel do it for the love of the craft and that they enjoy what they're doing. I mean, we're all not lawyers and accountants, but we all got into this because we had a passion for it at some point. And I feel like it's very important to work with people that still carry that passion. And when you work with people that don't bring an ego to set, but are there to make the film better and put all their energy into that, I think that creates already such a more friendly and open atmosphere. And I feel like it's, you know, even though it's quite hierarchical, I still feel you want to give a collaborative feel on set.
Absolutely.
And that's why I also try to, no matter who it is on the set, try to ask for their opinions, ask for their solutions, give everybody the feeling that they're contributing. And then I feel like it's becoming much more a shared effort than if you, this becomes a shared effort.
Yeah, it's a group effort, right? Yeah. It doesn't rely solely on the director to create that. It's an experience, right? And so curating the crew accordingly, I think, is important, especially per project, right?
Absolutely.
Some people really enjoy working on kids' projects. Some people are like, absolutely not. That's not my thing.
Yeah.
So finding that right mix is really important to creating that as well. Yeah. So let's talk about your food work.
Yeah.
You've done some incredible work with KFC in South Africa, in Romania as well. So what was that process like?
Yeah, very enjoyable, first of all. I think it's an amazing brand to work for KFC because it has such a distinctive visual identity, and there's so much sort of brand feeling that it carries out. That's what I actually like about working for fast food. That's the brands are so well known, they have such a strong brand identity and visual language that you can really sort of tap into that. What my goal within that project was is that if you compare it to, for instance, a McDonald's, there the food somehow magically comes together. But what for KFC is very important, that it comes from also their sort of brand heritage, is that it's handmade. So that is something that they're very big on, is that it used to be one guy somewhere. Yeah.
Colonel,
making chicken.
Mr. Colonel,
the Colonel,
right, in the US. I think he's from Kentucky.
Yeah, could be.
Kentucky Fried Chicken, yes, and, KFC, hello.
and that they're still very big on that. And and I felt that there was a very beautiful opportunity to involve the people, the sort of the average chef in a KFC restaurant, to hero them, but also to see if we can make tabletop shots that still incorporate hands. And generally, that's quite challenging because if you shoot 1,000 frames per second, if you are even a tenth of a second off, you know, that's exaggerated, 20 times. So to incorporate hands in super slow motion shots is challenging. Yeah. But I felt that was really the way forward to bring to life those preparation shots, is to see, can we involve tools, hands, the people, show the passion that goes into making that food, and in that way create sort of a very distinctive look for KFC specifically.
That's great. I mean, while watching that, you really do play with pacing as well. So there are these very quick shots, but then it's slow motion as you see, you know, the food going into the frying pan and the fryer. Which makes it really dynamic and makes it very engaging.
Yeah, and that came actually from the live action work that KFC makes globally. When I did my sort of research for the first series of films that we made for them, a lot of their live action work is almost like a music video.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, what would a music video for KFC that doesn't center around live action but centers around food look like? So. Yeah. That's where all that speed ramping, the quick shots, then the sort of slow motion, sort of see how much energy can you pack into 15 seconds, for instance. And part of that is the speed ramping in combination with the slow motion. It's the camera angles.
The jingle as well.
Yeah.
Finger looking good. I mean, I love that. I had that in my head. I'm like, wow, that is such a good, that was a good track for that. I really loved
that. I have to give credit to Tiger Fight, their production, music production company in South Africa. And they deliver, and it's so cool.
Wow.
That if you watch that commercial on YouTube, if you go to the comments, there's like 200 comments, and everybody asks, like, please release that track.
It's so good.
Yeah,
it was in
so
my head
good.
Stage
yeah.
later, and I'm like,
yeah.
okay.
<It's> like, yeah. Yeah, big props to those guys.
Yeah, yeah. Super cool. So can you talk to us about how the shoot was organized, like how many days it took to capture that 30-second spot that I saw?
Yeah. So the last KFC was actually for me a really fun one because we didn't only have shots inside the KFC restaurant, but we also had some sort of live action shots that were the sort of the bookends to the food sequence where you started the sort of the journey of the food with the consumer ordering it in where they were even in a skate park or with their car. And then you saw the food being created and you ended up with the people eating the food. So we had both sort of on location parts of the shoot and in the restaurant. I think all in all for three commercials, we had 4 days. And how that was structured is that we had 1 day for all the shots outside of the restaurant. The restaurant was built in a studio and we had 3 days to shoot all the restaurant shots. And we actually worked with two sets at the same time. And it's something that I tend to do quite a lot, is that some shots are so technical and they take so much preparation, stuff that with the camera, sort of with the lens underneath the oil, you know, that's a huge vat of oil that Absolutely. Needs to heat up for a couple of hours. Yeah. And needs to be prepped. So ideally we work on two sets simultaneously and one set just moves very slow, but you know, people are constantly working on that in between other takes. And then we have the main set where we're sort of trying to constantly push out shots. And usually it is about roughly an hour per shot. And that's usually broken up into like 20, 30 minutes to prep and then 20, 30 minutes to shoot. And then you move on to the next.
And how big is the crew for this?
Well, funny enough, I noticed that dependent on the country, the crew size differs a lot. And I think that's directly related to what are the day wages in that part of the world. And in South Africa, we had quite a large crew. So I think there was about 60 people. Romania, it was even 80. But there we have even three sets working at the same time. So that's...
And so in terms of the food styling department, right? Yeah. How many people were involved in creating and crafting the food to make it look so real? Because we all know there's a lot of movie magic that goes into these shots.
Well, you'll be surprised actually that I think almost 95, if not 98% of the food you see in those commercials is real.
Okay.
And that is being done by a very skilled team of food stylists. I worked with Bianca, I worked with Kirsten. They are both super experienced and do a lot of KFC, and they usually have one or two assistants. And then KFC brings their own chef to set, who is there to just sort of relentlessly fry chicken. And how they make it look so good is they are very meticulous. So we cook a whole batch of chicken. They choose the most beautiful piece. They choose the most beautiful bread. And then they spend a lot of time sort of building up that burger with sauce, with little leaves of lettuce.
Of course, yeah.
And I think they're amazing at it. And they use the real deal. But the trick, I don't want to spoil their secrets, but it usually looks good from like one side.
Right.
And then,
So
I had in the last film, I had a shot where we almost circled around the burger and I saw them sort of having a little stroke because, you know, that's where it gets really difficult for them.
Yeah. I'm always so fascinated about food commercials, right? When we worked on one ourselves, we were using shaving cream for the cream on the pie just because that actually sits quite well. And so, you know, people who watch it, they're like, oh, wow, that looks so edible. I'm like, oh, you don't want to eat that. So it's nice to know that you use real food.
Well, that is, for instance, for this one, because it's sometimes just so much easier to fry a real piece of chicken than it is to try to model one in 3D and print it and paint it.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you want to shoot ice cream in slow motion, you just have to rely on tricks to make it work, because otherwise it would just instantly melt in front of the hot lamps.
Yeah. So we were talking earlier and I was like, so Joris, are you a foodie? And I was surprised to hear that you're not really a foodie.
Nah, I think to a certain extent, you have to be a foodie to do this job. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love to eat. I love food. But for me, food is emotion, and food is that emotion doesn't necessarily need to come from high level food or haute cuisine. Mm-hmm. You know, I associate food also with the place where you eat it and the company where you eat it with. And I think that's also what you see a lot in my work, is that it is the relationship between food and people that I try to capture. And for me, it's the same. You know, there's a couple of restaurants in Amsterdam that I just like so much because of the atmosphere, that maybe the food is quite regular. Okay.
But the atmosphere, it's the experience of it.
It's the experience.
Yeah, cool. So in terms of the shots that you create, it's so immersive, especially with the food stuff, right? Yeah. You feel like you're just kind of flying over the shots and or flying over the food. Do you have any tricks and tips on your direction for that?
Yeah. So the challenge that I try to set myself for a lot of those types of shots is that I want to make at the same time, make the food feel larger than life. If we're heroing the food, let's hero it visually, make it sort of tower over us. I want to get the feeling, and maybe that comes from what I talked earlier of my experience as a kid, like, you know, laying my head on the table and having that perspective. So what if you're a tiny person standing on a kitchen counter and looking up at all those stuff? What if you could dwarf yourself? And but at the same time, I try to always involve a person with it, so you don't lose the human skill, that you don't lose sense of how big something actually is. And I feel that that's such a nice juxtaposition, that something feels huge and then you get an even bigger hand and then you realize, oh, it's just a small olive. You know what I mean? And I feel that that is, and I think that really works. And for me, that how you create those immersive shots is by trying to find camera angles that make the food look big or bigger, or sometimes just making the food bigger, cheating it, placing the camera low or looking up at something. And I think a lot of it is in energy. And I try to, you know, I'm not a director that creates like little still tableaus. No, for me, it's important that the camera moves, that something moves in front of the camera.
Right.
And when you have sort of those two movements, they either in synchrony works well, or they counter each other works well, so that you try to pack as much energy into a shot as possible. And then if you put that on a wide angle lens that exaggerates all those movements, it starts to become really alive.
Absolutely. And there's a couple points that I want to talk about on that. So when you work with your DOP or director of photography, what is the relationship there? And is it very hands-on, or do you kind of give them an idea of what you're looking for and then they capture it?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that on this last KFC job, I was speaking with my DOP, Alejandro, who is, by the way, a fantastic DOP, because he works mainly in food, and he was speaking how I, you know, he thinks that I could very well get along with another director, Italian director, but because we're so similar, but in how we work, we're very different. And I said, wow, it's curious, what do you mean? And he said, you always work with references. You're very specific in how you want something, and you either draw it or test it or shoot it on your iPhone or find a picture of it. And you really are very specific. And Paolo, the other director, he says, you know, he writes something down, but he never has an idea, and we find it together on set. And I thought it was so interesting, because I kind of thought that everybody did it like I did, and then you find out that it's not.
It's a different process for different people.
Apparently. Yeah. And for me, it came from the fact that, you know, by making it very specific, it requires me to think about it a lot, and that thought process helps me to sort of know what I want and not feel like I'm searching for something on set, which makes the whole process, in my opinion, more efficient. But I also feel it's much easier to get other crew members or the client or the agency on board with your ideas. But it really got me thinking that I think sometimes it also maybe limits me, because it is very interesting that you write something down and it maybe, you know, you start to look for it and it maybe something more beautiful than what you had in mind comes out.
So leaving room for that exploratory journey. I mean, I think it's a balance, right? I think that there's something to be said about being very prepared and maybe sometimes even overly prepared, that it's too restrictive. But it sounds like, I mean, especially based on what you've achieved, that there is that balance, and then there is that collaboration between the DOP and the director. So do you have an example that you can share with us on how you prep these shots and how you kind of pre-visualize it?
Yeah, so tying into that, like sometimes I now try to challenge myself more and more not to find a reference of something, because that means that it's already been done. So how can the trick is like, okay, if it hasn't been done, how do you show the client what you're going to do? And sometimes a drawing is not enough. So What I do now quite a lot is just shoot little tests in my kitchen with my wife on the iPhone. And an example for that is in the last KFC shoot that I did in Romania, you know, one of the steps of the creation of the burger was putting cheese on the burger. And I mean, you can let it fall, you can, you know, there's a thousand ways you can do it. But I was thinking, like, what haven't I seen? What can I do that's fun? And maybe also I got inspired by that. There's so many of these trick shots on TikTok. People who just
so many,
yeah, do like something, you know, throw a coat hanger on a beer bottle or something. And I thought, you know, it'd be really nice if we would throw the piece of cheese on the burger, and yeah, it would just look like this guy is such a natural at this that he just did it a thousand times, yeah, and he just threw it and it bam landed there perfectly. So to test that idea, we just tried it in, you know, my kitchen with my wife, and she, you know, we got some cheese. I don't think we even had a burger, but she just threw it on something else. And, you know, funny enough, it didn't take her that many times. I think she could hit it easily one or two times out of 10. And I did it with my iPhone, and we thought, wow, this shot is gonna work. But then, funny enough, like, it was so much easier than I thought in my own kitchen. But then you try to do it on set and you say, yeah, no, I tested this, it's not that hard, you know. Right. And then you find out that the guy is a terrible thrower. Guy was master chef, by the way.
So you have to get your wife back on set.
Yeah.
How did you resolve the whole throwing of the...
So, well, I actually thought, like, should we find something like a stick or a rope to make it more easy? And I felt like the magic of the shot is just doing it for real, having the guy just literally throw it. So the guy was a skilled chef, but, you know, being a skilled chef doesn't make you necessarily a good thrower. So since it was a multi-day shoot, I told him, like, you know, whenever you're bored, grab a piece of cheese, grab a piece of bread. And yeah, because it's a lot of waiting around. You know?
Yeah, of course.
And the guy was amazing because literally every moment I was like, where's Mihai? He was in the corner practicing.
So dedicated.
He was super dedicated and he nailed it.
Yeah,
I mean,
good.
He took a couple of tries, but he got it fairly often. Yeah, so I was super, super proud of him.
People would be surprised at how much goes into these shots that they see for half a second.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the art, right? This is why we do what we do as creatives, right? This is not a 9-to-5. We are living and breathing this stuff. And also the fact that you're working with your wife to kind of create this spec work. Do you work with her a lot? You were saying that she was a director as well.
Yeah, she's actually an amazing director and she is specialized in directing actors.
Nice.
So I definitely learn a lot from her in that regard. And she's been my AD on a shoot, and it was a lot of fun, but we usually work more sort of in the pre-production together. I bounce a lot of ideas off her, we test a lot together in the kitchen, but it's usually, you know, that's why I think we also work well as a couple, as we share the same passion. And you know, if you're having a coffee, then you speak about the treatment you're writing,
right.
And I'm so happy to have somebody that understands what I do and that we can bounce off ideas of each other. And so I don't work with her sort of officially, but unofficially, she's definitely my
I know a little bit about that. People often are like, how do you work with your partner? I can't imagine it any other way. So it is quite cool.
Exactly.
To,
if it works, it works.
If it works,
for us, it definitely
exactly.
works. Absolutely.
So, Joris, I want to ask, what was your inspiration growing up? Did you watch like films like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids? Did you ever see that film?
Absolutely. Yeah,
okay, that was one of my favorites. And I have to say, when I look at your work, it brings me back to that. And I think that's why I'm like, oh my God, I love that. That was one of my favorite films growing up.
Rewatch that again.
I think they did a new one, but I want to go back to the original one.
Absolutely.
Yeah. There's so much incredible work out there, right, Joris? So how do you gain inspiration? I mean, I know I'm oftentimes just fascinated by the contemporary work that's being done, also work that's been done in the past and how it can be translated in today's kind of modern world and the viewers modernize, right? So can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Funny enough, I watch a lot of Instagram for inspiration, also because I mainly use my Instagram for professional use. So I've mostly follow people from the industry, directors, DOPs. And for me, that's a big source of inspiration, but also it's a great way to stay up to date on what is trendy at the moment. What do people do? Where is the industry moving to? So I feel like it's a great way to stay very in touch with the industry, because it's sort of a curated page of people's best work. And if you follow the right people, you get a very good sense of what's being made.
And their styles and different styles.
Exactly. Right. And so for me, that's a huge source of inspiration. And I also try to follow people that are not necessarily working in food or kids, but to either fashion or car commercials, and see, you know, what's being done there, and techniques that are used that can inspire you to do something with food, for instance. But I was also sometimes so amazed about feature films or series that are, you know, already sometimes a couple of years old, but how innovating that stuff sometimes was and how that still can inspire you. I think Breaking Bad was a great example that, you know, what happens if you attach the camera to an object, and that is something that, you know, was done by Lurpak and now is, you know, sort of common good in the food commercial. And a brief landed on my desk the other day, which had the opening sequence of Lord of War in it, where you follow the creation of a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to use that as an inspiration to create a food commercial where you sort of track the food as it's being created.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of inspiration that can come from either working specific commercials from the industry, or feature films, or any art from that matter.
Yeah, that makes me actually think about, has inspiration ever come from like a horror film for food? Like just like that whole like vibe of something like big.
Yeah, maybe I should revisit that. Yeah, absolutely.
Something there, right?
Yeah.
Just gaining inspiration from different genres and then merging them together to create something unique and new. I think that's really the fun part about our industry as well, because it's
absolutely
about surprise. So in our industry, right, when sometimes our portfolio doesn't cover certain briefs that we're really keen to get, right, spec work is key, right? So can you talk to us a little bit about your process and relationship to spec work?
Yeah, spec work has been, I think, instrumental to my career at any stage. And I feel like it would probably still be the way to move forward even now, even though I already have a reel that I can win pitches with. Because it is sort of the catch-22 that you need to show certain work to get some certain work. And for me, spec work was always the way to sort of break that cycle, because, you know, I feel like if I write a script that I'm very passionate about, it's always been quite easy to form a crew of people that, you know, believe in those ideas too. And it's a great way to, without constraints of a client, without constraints of an agency, without anybody sort of saying, yeah, but that doesn't fit the brand, or those kind of arguments, just create something that you feel is really cool. And maybe, you know, I also used it as a learning technique. So I saw certain shots and I wonder, how did they do it? And I put just those into my spec work and sort of as an opportunity to figure out the dynamics of it. And for me, spec work really help to sort of bridge that gap where if you don't have something on your reel, how are they going to trust you to make it for them? And especially in the food commercials, I made a couple of food films that really pushed my career forward, where I could show that I was able to do it. And one of them was, for instance, about sushi, and I chose that very specifically for sushi because there are no big brands that sell sushi. So you would never get a sushi film on your desk otherwise. But sushi is so beautiful and so cinematic and so aesthetically pleasing.
Also so fresh, right? It has to cut. It's very high maintenance, right? It has to look fresh. I saw that work that you're referring to. It was really beautiful, especially with the knife going over the sous chef.
Yeah, the over the salmon and over the tuna. And
yes, exactly.
So I really use that opportunity of creating a script to put my own fascination for sushi in there. And I think that film has won me actually a lot of pitches, because, you know, it's a film that you would otherwise never see because no brand would make it. And it illustrated that.
So that was spec work.
That was spec work.
Wow,
definitely.
The sushi one was spec. Okay. I actually, as a viewer, I didn't realize that was spec work. So
that's the goal. I mean,
it was, beautiful, beautiful work. So there's a lot of freedom in creating spec work. And so how do you do it on like little to no budget?
Yeah, well, that's the challenge. I used to try to do something at least every year, but it's just when your own level and expectations rise, it's just harder and harder to produce. What for me was always a good opportunity is to find a couple of key people. So if you have your DOP, they usually
have those relationships.
You know, have the connections with the rental company to get you a camera. They know their grips and their gaffers, so they can, you know, and the camera assistant. Yeah. So if you have a good DOP, then usually that part of the crew is settled. And so if you have a couple of those key people, you quite soon have a accrue together. Something else that worked really well for me is that, for instance, for the sushi project, I knew that Lukin had just bought a bolt. And a bolt is his robotic arm.
Yes, oh yeah.
And working with it requires a lot of training. So for them, they also had this period where they had it. The guy had their has his training.
And they wanted to create with it.
They want, the guy needs practice, you know. So sure. I thought, you know, let's, there are, and this was in the beginning of Corona. They have a lot of in-house people. All projects were standing still. So I thought, you know, these are the guys who have the manpower, the equipment, the space, and they have nothing to do. So this is the moment to jump on them, come with something cool. And they were equally enthusiastic. So they actually really facilitated us with a crew and space and their bolt and their everything to make that film. So
that's wonderful. It's super inspiring, right? Especially for up and coming creators. Creating spec work is really key to breaking into the industry and passion, right? You have to love what you do. You know, you have to love it. So our industry can be quite demanding, right? Especially when we're juggling multiple time zones. I mean, we work a lot with the East Coast and the West Coast as well. So finding balance is key, especially with the long hours that can be, you know, 12, sometimes 12-hour shoot days, 13-hour shoot days. So one of the things that I try to implement into my life is just meditation, finding that quiet in the morning and just really being super present in the moment. So do you have any kind of techniques that you can share with us today that you practice as a director?
Well, I wish I meditated more. I think that would do my mental health a lot of good. But I find it very hard to make that time in the day to do that. And I think it's definitely something my wife and I just have a newborn, and that definitely changes also the dynamic at home and how much you want to work and how much you can work. And she recently said to me, you know, in the 5 years that we're together, you've worked on every single holiday that we've been on. And I think that was quite a wake-up call. So I'm the first to admit that I completely struggle with being a workaholic and struggle with saying no to projects, because if they land on my desk and you know, I immediately get enthusiastic. So I'm maybe not the best person to ask how to keep a healthy work balance. Helped me a lot. It's approaching work very methodically. So what I mean by that is that when I started out, I felt like being creative and getting good ideas was some sort of magic trick that you could do. But now I understand that for me, it is a lot about having structure. So I really try to structure, for instance, you know, the folders that I have a project in, and I really make sure that I can find stuff easily, because that just saves me time and that makes me more efficient and frees up sort of headspace. But also I started to build a library of commercials. So if a commercial sparks me or I download it and I put it in a folder that's either about lighting, camera work, or food or fast food. And all my treatments that I wrote, I keep them in a separate folder. I have also some treatments of other directors that I found very inspiring. And by having sort of a very methodical way of sort of approaching the work, I noticed that it becomes so much more efficient. That it frees up time and also, you know, takes some of the stress out of the work, because now I know, you know, after writing, I don't know, 1,000 treatments, I know what kind of light I like.
Right.
You know, so I don't need to constantly come up with new ways to describe that. Right. So I can just, you know, take that from an earlier treatment. And, you know, if you have all the text of all your treatments ready, sometimes if you need to push it out in a day, you can just and make sure that in at least a couple of the chapters where it really counts, you're putting the specific ideas, but in the chapters describing how a lived-in kitchen looked like, I have that. You know, describing cinematic light on food, I have that.
You have that.
By being methodical, you can take a lot of that energy out of it and focus it on, you know, what does set this project apart from other projects.
Yeah, and actually, you bring up a really good point, because I think in today's world, you know, we think meditation is like sitting somewhere on a mountain in quiet and just listening to your thoughts, right? But I think that can come in many different forms, right? Organization, like even just like the practice of being organized is something that is, it's a form of meditation as well, or like a form of calm, right? That creates more peace in the mind to be able to be more efficient. And I think that that's something that is unique to your process. And I think it's great.
Yeah. And another thing that I think relates to the same point is that there's a book called Deep Work, and I think it's quite famous. Other people must have read it, but for me, it really opened my eyes on how certain programs or things on your computer draw your attention, and how weird it actually is that your email program is constantly open. I mean, you don't walk to your mailbox 20 times a day.
I know, right? Actually, that's a very good point. Yeah.
So I noticed that if I really need to push out a treatment, what I do is, you know, and it sounds so silly, but it helps, you know, shut off WhatsApp, shut off your email program. Yep. Just kill all outside ways of getting to you, put on some classical music and work for 3 hours straight.
Yeah.
And then you notice how much deeper into focus you can get. Then, you know, and that book is really, really adamant about it, that even if it just pops up in the corner of your screen, even if you don't open the email, it took you out of your zone.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you just shut it off, Apple Q, and then just for a couple hours, that book really helped me to find sort of the, find a way of working that, for instance, for a treatment really works for me. It's just to shut every outside influence and just get the work done.
Thank you so much for that recommendation. I'm definitely going to look into that, because that's something I'm also working on myself, is improving my focus, right? Because especially as an executive producer who also sometimes works as a creative director, there's a lot going on and there's a lot of stimuli, right? And sometimes I thrive on that, but and then shutting off can be a bit challenging at times. So
how do you use the adrenaline that comes from sort of all that different stimulus that brings you to a sort of higher level, but at the same time sort of also make sure that you don't have too many impulses and really dive deep into a subject. And
beautiful. When a brief lands on your desk, how do you find that nugget that you resonate with? Like, how do you build up to that point when you're creating your treatments?
Yeah. So I found out that what works really well for me is if I read the brief, is be very intuitive on what is it in that brief that makes me enthusiastic. And it's usually that either there's a shot in there or a product or something in there that makes you think, hey, I want to do that. I want to make this film, and be, you know, really zero that out in the briefing call with the agency. Go into that already, because for them it's also nice to know what you hook on.
Sure.
So sometimes, you know, so I found out that the more vocal I am why I like it, the more that is becoming sort of sacred within the project, because you've been very open from the beginning that, you know, this shot is what makes me want to make this film. And then they think twice about sort of suggesting to take that out and making you less interested in the project. So I try to be in the briefing call very specific about it. I try to be in the treatment very specific about it. But also I try to make client understand why I do this project. It could be also, for instance, the opportunity to have this type of lighting. And I noticed that it also makes working during the whole project easier, because everybody knows, you know, why you're in it. So it becomes easier to sort of keep that alive. And it also makes me sort of more willing to make compromises maybe on other parts, where they say, yeah, you know, we know that you like cast member A, but we really feel strongly about cast member B, that you think, you know, it's a game of give and take, and I'll let them have this, but don't touch this.
Right.
And because you've been very open about that from the beginning.
Absolutely. You know, there you go. And you bring up such a good point, right? Finding that balance with the clients.
Yeah.
And even though sometimes there are definitely moments where it's like, oh, I don't agree with this, but this is sacred. Like, let's not touch this. We'll do that. So finding that balance, it can be very tricky, you know.
Absolutely.
It's an art in and of itself. And
yeah,
it requires a lot of not only like just people skills, like dealing with different personalities. And
absolutely.
And that is one of the challenges that oftentimes I think gets overlooked. And when we see a finalized piece, like all the decisions and all the conversations that were had in order to get to that place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for me, like I noticed that I feel like one of my strong points is getting along with clients and making everybody feel heard and that opinions are sort of validated and that everybody can have their say, but still making sure that the film is on the right course and that I can make what I make. And I think I was very much influenced by my time at Wenneker, and Maurice Wenneker, the founder of that, once said, you know, if you wanted to have it completely your way, you should have made documentaries with your own money, but you're now filming with somebody else's money, and in the end, you know, they need to be happy. Yeah. And I try to sort of keep that in mind in times when it's tough, that nothing is personal, it's all business. You know, it can feel very personal because you put so much of yourself into it. But in the end,
yeah,
it rarely ever is. So I think by, as I said earlier, to finding something in a project that you is sacred for you and be very vocal about it, that usually is protected.
And the work is always better when the director is actually heart invested in it, right? Yeah. When it's not, then it doesn't really land, doesn't really even resonate with the viewer. So I think having that there is a key ingredient, if you will. Ingredients.
Yeah, there we go.
to have in the work. Yeah. Super important.
Yeah.
Great. So, Joris, can you talk to us a little bit about how you became a director and what that process has been like for you over the course of your career?
Yeah. Well, originally I wanted to become a director because I was just so fascinated by movies. And I found out that my parents had like a huge stack of VHS tapes with movies like Pulp Fiction. And I got just super inspired by that and thought, I want to make movies. And I found out that a lot of the directors I looked up to started out in music videos and commercials. So I thought, that could be an interesting stepping stone. And by the time I knew Maurice Wenneker, who had his own production company called Wenneker TV, and got in touch with him and basically sort of elbowed my way into his company and was an in-house director for almost 5 years. And I consider that my film school. When you're an in-house director, you take every job that lands on the desk, and that's part of the deal. And that's why it's also in the beginning, especially a very good deal, because somebody else is responsible of getting you as much work as possible. Mm. And for me, it's good because you're, can do a lot of different projects and hone your skill set.
Have that versatility.
Versatility, yeah. Exactly. But I also noticed that I was losing pitches against directors that were specialized in something. If it was a funny film, they wanted the funny guy. If it was a car film, they wanted the guy with the car on his reel. So I started to realize that for me, the way forward was to find a specialization. And I feel that being a specialist really helps people to understand what you're doing and what you're good at.
What your passions are as well, what your focus is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Being a specialist really excelled my career because people know what kind of scripts to call you for. And especially in the beginning, it's quite a daunting process because it means shutting the door on other projects as
Absolutely.
Well.
And I think a lot of creatives struggle with that, right? Yeah. Because you're really staying committed to a specific genre, right?
Exactly.
And then it's like you're almost married to it.
Yeah.
But I think that there can be, and we talk a little bit about the spec work, right? With spec work, how you can open the doors through other niches as well.
Yeah.
But we do live in a world that is very like, okay, we need this specific person who does this specific thing.
Yeah.
But in this modern age, a lot of people do a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And they do them well as well. So having multiple skill sets, I think, can inform the work and make it better.
Absolutely. Well. Yeah. And I think that still within food and with kids, it can still have a documentary angle in it.
Sure.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. So with those subjects, you still have a certain freedom. And to me, it doesn't feel limiting per se in a way that I feel it also allows you to sort of dive deeper into the subject and to be very aware of what is possible and how it's done and learn techniques. But if you are a generalist, it's much harder to scrape beneath the surface of something.
Yeah.
So I feel that initially it might sound limiting, but for me, there's deepening, if you know what I mean. So, but it doesn't mean that I wouldn't like to branch out. And as I said, I think it would be great to do to use the tabletop techniques to create a Lego commercial. I feel like I would love to do something with power tools because I feel like the camera technique that you use in food, the tabletop, that could really bring to life other products as well, not only necessarily food.
Exactly. Yeah, there are tools that people use,
exactly.
Like all the various other tools that you use in cooking.
Yeah,
right?
For instance. Yeah.
Exactly. As a freelance director, Do you work with an agent? Are you repped by production companies? How does one work with you?
Yeah, so it differs a bit per part of the world. And in Amsterdam, there's a couple of specialized production companies in food, for instance, like Noosh and Chuck.
Yeah.
So they know how to find me quite easily.
Yeah.
But for other production companies outside of the Netherlands, they usually do a couple of food projects a year. And what works really well for me is to have an agent for different parts of the world who basically work as a funnel for scripts. So because they are a well-known agent, a lot of scripts land on their desk and I'm on their roster, and then you have the biggest chance of catching some of that work. And I think it's, to me, it works really well to have different agents for specific regions, because I do think it's important that they have a little bit of a local know-how or a local network of people that
they can navigate. Yeah, sure. And having an agent allows you then to focus on that deep work so that you're focusing on treatments and then you have an agent who's helping bring those briefs to you, which is a really good.
Yeah, and it's also somebody who's in your corner and, you know, like where you can sometimes if a project is difficult or something is not going as it should, that you can sort of have a chat about or maybe ventilate a bit to get it out of your system. So to me, it also feels like you have somebody who has your back a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great. So yours, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Many questions I've asked. What advice would you give your younger self in terms of pursuing this career? Any tips you would have told like the younger version of yourself in entering this career?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, there was a quote my wife read somewhere and it said, it was something along the lines of, you know, if you learn from a mistake, it's no longer a mistake. So, and that really spoke to me. So in that sense, I feel like a lot of the things that happened, they also, you know, brought me where I am. So but if I would give myself a piece of advice is worry less. I think I spend a lot of time still worrying and usually things land on their feet pretty well.
Yeah.
So try to enjoy the process more and enjoy where you are in that moment, because what I struggle with a lot is that you want to achieve something, but the moment you're there, your horizon has already shifted, mm-hmm. and you still have that feeling of not being where you want to be.
Yeah.
And I think looking back, I feel like things are going to land, you're going to achieve certain things. So enjoy where you are, because it's coming, my man. Like, yeah. Chill out.
That's great. I think that's such an important thing to even remind ourselves of today. You know?
Yeah.
And that's well phrased as well. So as you achieve your goals, you know, in your career, it's like you're there and then it's like almost like anticlimactic, right? You reach it and you're like, oh, okay, what's next? What's next? So instead of just always thinking about what's next, just enjoying the process. Also the things that quote unquote are disguised as like failures or things that are disappointments can actually be opportunities for something else. And that's how life is, right? It's not linear. It's like, it's all different types of rhythms. And I think honoring that and also like embracing that is also part of what makes being in our industry difficult, right? But it's a good reminder. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I think that wraps our session up today, Joris. Thank you so much for joining and for sharing all your insights and your career. And we wish you the best of luck with everything that you're creating.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was a pleasure.